Haiti. The Caribbean nation is in turmoil, besieged by political instability, humanitarian crises, gang warfare, and an economy in freefall. The situation has escalated to the point where the government has been asking for foreign intervention in the country to restore order. But many argue that past international interventions in Haiti have only made things worse, not better. So what would be different this time? And is it what Haitians really want? I'll ask Haiti's ambassador to the United States, Bakchid Edmond, in an Upfront special. Joining us today is Haiti's ambassador to the United States, Bakchid Edmond. Ambassador Edmond, thank you so much for joining us on Upfront.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
You've been a career diplomat for over 30 years, during which time there have been multiple foreign interventions in the country. In fact, you've recently called for an international presence in Haiti. Help me understand, what exactly are you asking for here? Do you want troops on the ground?
What we are seeking, as a member of the international community, Haiti is in a position to request such foreign assistance, armed assistance, because we have a situation where gangs, armed gangs, they are taking over the entire the territory. The capital city, Port-au-Prince, one day, if nothing is done, we could wake up one day where you will hear armed gangs taking over all public institutions, president's office, prime minister's office, and so on. Therefore, it is most urgent from our friends of the international community to come and help.
Okay, so walk me through.
Because we need help.
Walk me through what the help looks like. You say gangs are taking over. No one's disputing that.
Armed gangs.
Armed gangs, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. No one's disputing that. The troops come, these international troops.
Absolutely.
With guns.
Yeah.
And what do they do when they arrive?
But I believe what they will do, as the Prime Minister always said, they are not coming to replace the National Police.
Okay.
They are coming to support the National Police and operations. And after having those operations against the gangs, there will be, parallelly, there will be some training to the National Police, because our police is not trained for that.
What are they trained for?
It's the civil police we have. It's the civil police, according to the rules of this institution. That police we have should not even have those automatic weapons. Because that's one of the reasons we always want to have our armed forces back. Because the issue of gangs can be only confronted with armed forces. The national police we have is a civil police force, therefore did not have any training whatsoever to fight gangs.
So when I hear you say that, and I think of other countries where this has happened, where they say, you know, we need troops to come in and support. Our forces aren't trained to deal with the violence on the ground. It's been an occupation. At the very least, it's been an intervention.
No, I mean, occupation, I think we need to establish a difference between occupation, invasion, and or foreign assistance. Because as a country, we are...
Because you said it's not either, right? You said it's not an intervention and it's not an occupation.
It is not an occupation.
But is it an intervention?
Intervention, because it could have been seen that way, but the fact that a government requests the assistance, it is something different now. Because we are a country, member of the international community, which is facing a very difficult situation. It's very important to request assistance to help
this
us.
This feels a little bit like a distinction without a difference, respectfully. And I say that because when you spoke to CNN, you said it is not going to be an intervention or occupation force. It is, as you just said, going to be a kind of international assistance. The word intervention seems to make you uneasy a little bit. Why is this not an intervention?
No, because, listen, there is a reality here. The reality is we've known our history, unfortunately, had made us, a bit fearful of that because of those past experiences. But we always say that it's time to go beyond the past. Indeed, we need to learn from our past, from the mistakes, not to repeat
them
again.
Different? What will be different from this intervention or assistance than from previous moments?
I believe the way it should be different is the way that they have to be a clear mandate. They have to know that this is what they are coming to do, to help the national police, to fight against the gangs, to restore law and order, and make sure that we create a better environment for elections. Because remember, we need to hold elections because we need to build back our democratic institutions. But in this kind of environment, we cannot have elections.
So you say we need to learn from the past, which makes sense. We need to look to the past to see how interventions haven't worked. Now, so far, it sounds like you're just still authorizing an intervention, just not calling it that. But what I think about is 1915. I think about the U.S. occupation there from 1915 to about 1934, I believe.
Yeah, 19 years.
Yeah, there's been international forces in Haiti from 1994 until 2004. Uh-huh. I have never seen or heard of an intervention, a foreign intervention, or foreign assistance in Haiti that has worked out well for the Haitian people. Why should we believe, if we're looking to history, that this will be any different?
But listen, we should stop thinking about those kind of events that occurred in the past.
Why?
Because if we keep thinking about them, the only reason we can think about them is to learn from those mistakes of the past.
So what was the mistake of the past? What went wrong there that won't go wrong this time?
Because we understand probably the not only the rules of engagement or the plans that was supposed to be set to make sure that the create stability in Haiti was not followed properly or was not successful. But this time what we want to have that international arm assistance to the national police to help them to quell the gangs and make sure that the national police is well-trained and not to have those international partners come in and do the job for the national police and they leave. They have to come to help the police the job and then train them, and then before they leave, they train them.
How long will they stay?
But experts will tell you exactly how long it could take to...
I'm sure you've consulted experts. What do they say?
I haven't spoken to any expert on this matter yet, but I believe those experts will tell you and how long, how much time...
Will the experts support the idea of an intervention? I mean, if we haven't spoken to them, how do we know that that's what they would...
Most of those international institutions, they have security consultants and experts. They can tell you exactly...
Fair enough.
How to get there, you know? But the most important thing to us is the fact, the reality on the ground now. You have 4 million kids that cannot go to school. They cannot go back to school. They should have gone back to school in September. Now we are in December.
Yeah.
And we have many people sick at their home. They cannot go to hospital because all roads are blocked by gangs, control gangs.
So let's talk about
those. Those are the reality we need to face. I mean, I understand people may have some hard feeling about the past.
Well, they also have hard feelings about the relationship between the police and the gangs, sir. I mean, that's another piece of this.
But let's talk about that. In any country, you will have the police force. There are always some co-op element in them. In any country.
Yeah, but
not on Haiti.
But not necessarily at the same level as we see here. I mean, I'm in the United States. There's no lack of corruption in police departments here. So I'm not throwing stones from a glass.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, absolutely. But let's talk a little bit about this. Armed gangs control about 60% of Port-au-Prince, right? And you've talked about this. Some argue, though, that sections of Haiti's elite are complicit in the violence and often benefit from gang activity. This is the important distinction. Four Haitian politicians have had U.S. imposed sanctions on them, right? That including current and former senators over the last 2 months alone for drugs and narcotics trafficking. Jimmy Achrezier, head of the G9 Gang Alliance, also known as Barbecue, has reportedly received protection from local police and the Moise administration, even as his gang is carrying out massacres in Haiti. Just to be clear for our international audience, he is a former police officer. Mm-hmm. So the relationship here between gangs and police, between gangs and high society, between gangs and politicians is very tight. So when you say we're going to have outside people come in and help the police fight the gangs, it seems to me that in some ways fighting the gangs is very challenging the police if they're working with each other.
It is challenging. And if you look at some other countries, what they do, they deploy armed forces to fight gangs. The example of Salvador. But when it comes to the issue of having, some elite people or some members of the elite, economic elite, to be associated with the gangs and the police officers.
Not some.
Those are probably some facts. I mean, we don't deny that.
Yeah.
But I don't have any evidence myself to say truly it's the fact.
You don't have evidence of what?
No, because the fact that you're saying there has been some connections. I know that,
Do you believe that there are connections between police and high society?
Of course, there should be.
Okay,
I believe there is.
You've been in government for over 30 years.
I believe there is. But the fact is, if you look at that presentation you made, connection between police officers and gangs, connection between elite and so on, particularly the police force.
Yeah.
Therefore, now you will agree with me that police cannot carry out that job alone.
Maybe, but if I'm fortifying the police...
Not maybe, because there is no way they can carry out that job.
No, but sir, if...
That's one of the reasons we are trying to get that international assistance.
Let me give you a more concrete example. Okay, currently, Prime Minister Ariel Henry appointed France Elbe as head of the National Police Force,
yes.
Right? Elbe, who's been appointed head of the National Police Force, has been accused of being involved in police repression and human rights abuses. Not just recently... but probably as long as you've been in government, for decades, right? As well as for having connections to gangs, particularly Jean-Élie Mueller, or TLE, like one of the most powerful gang leaders in the country. So if you appoint someone who has gang connections to the National Police Force, then how can we trust anything? Why would we support a police force that is fundamentally corrupt?
First of all, let me tell you, when it comes to the Director General of the National Police Force, LB, all those accusations... I always call them allegations, because personally, I don't have any arguments, any evidence to prove that.
Okay, but Elbe is reportedly godfather to the son of one of the most powerful gang leaders in the country, sir.
This is what they said, but we don't have... Personally, I don't think they have...
Do you believe it?
I cannot believe it, because I don't see any evidence of that. I cannot believe it.
Do you have any reason to think it's not true?
I may have reasons to believe it's not true, but that could have happened. For instance, you were the godfather of someone's son, and tomorrow that person decided to do something bad.
Right. Except the problem is the crime is older than this. But the crime is older than the son, and you're laughing because you absolutely know that is not true. But we'll move on. But I'm very, very. You can certainly understand why the international community is skeptical of supporting a police force. That has such
I wouldn't say the international community. I would say some of the international community. Some countries, they may have some reservations. But I strongly believe the most important issue here is the security of the Haitian people.
No doubt.
Because if you have a country, member of the international community, 1 hour and a half from the most powerful country on earth, they are facing such a dire situation where gangs are raping women, girls, killing people every day, kidnapping people.
Yeah.
And then something, we are asking for such assistance to help us to get over this.
Yeah.
It is the most important obligation of the international community to come to help us.
Fair enough. If it works, I think about Daniel Foote, who's the former U.S. Special Envoy to Haiti. He resigned in 2021. And he's talked about foreign interference in the country, and he's obviously spoken against it. He says that the presence of foreign soldiers could be seen as, quote, an invading force propping up a dictator. And he suggested that these international forces could be met with backlash and that it could produce, his words, a bloodbath.
But I'm not going to...
Is he right?
All those... This is wrong. This is wrong. I'm not going to...
Which part is wrong?
Everything he said.
You're saying that there's no way they'll be read as...
There's no way.
Because there'll be no backlash, pushback.
No, I'm not going to respond to Daniel Foote. But when you mention about dictator, I mean, I know Daniel Foote knows the definition of a dictator. Prime Minister Henry is not a dictator. We know what does that mean.
He said it could be seen as propping up a dictator, partly because you haven't had elections.
No,
and partly because you asked
for a
period of time to have the elections.
That's the issue.
We're a year.
That's the issue.
It's been a year.
That's the issue, Mark. A lot of people are talking about Haiti, but they don't know Haiti.
Daniel Foote knows Haiti.
Oh, no, he doesn't know Haiti. That doesn't mean that the fact that you serve in Haiti for 1 or 2 years, you know Haiti. The important thing is, Prime Minister Ariel Henry was appointed by an elected president, as the Constitution says. No Prime Minister has never been elected. We don't have elections for Prime Minister.
Right.
He was appointed by an elected president. Unfortunately, that president was assassinated, and he became automatically the head of the government and the head of the Council of Ministers.
Yeah.
But now, his main mission is to hold elections. He pulled all forces together and hold elections. But since the security situation does not permit it yet, we have to work together, as he's trying to do, to have a national consensus with all stakeholders.
It was supposed to happen between 60 and 120 days after the unfortunate assassination of Jovenel Moïse last July.
But could you imagine if 60 days after, 120 days, there was no election, we would have another prime minister?
What would have happened? Would it have been a bloodbath?
No. What I'm saying is that would have been so many prime ministers. Because if the one has a mission on 120 days to hold elections...
As the law suggests.
Yes, and elections could not be held. It would have put another prime minister. And I'm sure it would have been difficult to hold it. Again, you know, there are another third one. So at least I think the most important thing is to get the national consensus and to make sure that we have a national agreement. And
you don't even have an electoral council.
No, I mean, electoral council, the prime minister cannot appoint a political council on itself. He has to talk, he has to discuss.
He said he needed sufficient time. It's been a year.
No, because the reason, if it was for the prime minister himself, he would have put it already. But we need to have a national consensus to have an electoral council.
And how do you get a national consensus?
By putting together all stakeholders and have a discussion, have a political agreement.
And how do we get there? What is missing to get there?
The prime minister is working with them. He's still in discussion with many political parties.
Give me a timeline. When will this happen?
I mean, I believe it should have been done already.
When will it happen?
But I think by next year, we should have concluded a political agreement.
By the end of the calendar year?
Yeah, by early next year, we should have a maximum.
Next year?
Yeah.
So we're talking about a few months from now?
Yeah. No, not a few months.
It's December of 2022.
Less than a month.
Oh, yeah, okay. You're saying even less time.
So,
sounds great.
I believe that it's very important to have that political agreement within the political parties and make sure that that political agreement can set up a new form of governance and go to form an electoral council and we'll start working on the electoral process.
When do you imagine full elections?
Absolutely.
When do you imagine them?
Oh, I'm not an expert of that, but I know once the government appoints a new electoral council, they will have to meet with experts and to assess the situation and tell the executive, this is the time I believe we need to have the election. Because the electoral council has to present the calendar to the government. But the government doesn't have any power to decide on the electoral date. We can't.
So many people would argue, and have argued, myself included, to be clear, that the establishment of a government, a democratically elected government, should come before you call for foreign intervention, before you call for troops on the ground. Why not?
You know what you say? It's like your house is on fire before 911, before the truck comes, and you don't do anything to try to put off the fire. When your house is on fire, if there is an attempt to put off the fire personally, while the truck is on its way, you have to do something.
Right.
It's not the fact that this government...
You have to do something.
Yeah, it's not the fact because the government is not...
In your house, you do something.
Of course.
In Haiti, the people are the ones doing deciding, and they haven't voted.
You always mention the people. Well, yeah, the people will be able to vote when there is a normal situation like security situation established. Because in this such environment, you cannot come the people to call for elections. They are not going to vote. And we want those elections to be free, fair, and democratic. And there have to be a large participation of the people in the elections. Because if you go to election in this kind of environment, I assure you, less than 5% will be able to go to vote. Because this is not what we want. We want a full or a large participation of the people. So the authorities that will come out of those elections will be legitimate.
When we think about the conditions on the ground, there's a security question, but there's other things that reflect life in Haiti right now. Haitians are facing food shortages, water shortages, really just basic necessity shortages. Almost 5 million people right now are experiencing acute hunger. And the cost of living is on the rise, and the price of petrol is doubled at this point. Now, in September, acting Prime Minister Henri announced a further hike in gas prices in order, as he said, to keep the country running. In the midst of mass protests against inhumane conditions and the cost of living. I mean, this is a very interesting contrast here. Is the government prioritizing its self-preservation over the basic needs of Haitian people?
I don't think that's not the case. There is no intent of preserving the government's self-preserving over the people's need. This is what I've been telling you. Some people are talking about Haiti, but they don't know the reality.
Well, explain to me.
The government took the decision to do that, because the government has been subsidizing the fuel market. And it's more than $400 million a year.
Okay.
Therefore, by stopping the subsidies, that money will be able, the government will be able to use those money for social program and social work. This is the thing.
So the cost of living is through the roof. People can't afford food, clothing, and shelter. You double the price of gas, which makes it harder for them to get food, clothing, and shelter, so that you provide...
We don't double the price of gas. The price of gas, the way
forgive me,
was,
the price of gas has doubled.
Have doubled.
And yeah. You've stopped subsidizing.
Because it is not in the interest of the government to keep subsidizing the fuel, because most of those products who have been subsidized, they are not going to in the favor of the population. Because those who have benefited from that, those are who can afford those fuels. Therefore, we stop the subsidies and to make sure the money goes to the national treasury for social work and social programs.
But so all this money is going to go, that's being taken out is going to go directly back into social programs for the
because that's because we just started it and we make sure that the government will make sure that there is enough. Capacity to help those.
When will you have the capacity?
But you know, it's a
when?
Process. It is a process.
Yeah.
It is a process. Since we just started with the program, because I believe it's been less than 3 months, or 3 months maximum that the government has stopped the subsidies, and that's really provoked the hike of the price.
Yeah.
But it's not because we decided to double the price. It's the price of fuel in the international market.
Understood. But it's still double for the people.
And this is not the responsibility of the government because of that. But we just to... And the reason, the most importantly, because we do want to make sure that the real people in need are the ones who benefit from those $400 million a year we've been subsidizing.
But the real people in need are suffering because you stopped subsidizing. And you knew when you pulled the subsidy out that life was going to get harder for them.
Yeah.
And now you're saying there's social programs, and it's been 3 months, no program, and you don't have a date for when the programs are going to start. Is it going to be a year from now, 2 years from
now?
No,
there have been some social programs, probably not at a wider scale yet.
Yeah, I mean, for the very people who got the stuff taken from them.
But remember, it's a large country of 12 million people. It is not something that you can do overnight.
But you pull the subsidies overnight.
Yeah, because it's a process. The subsidies, all those $400 million does not come on overnight. It's a process to get to collect those money. Because those are money we used to pay to import the fuel. But now the government stopped doing that. They say they are not going to subsidize the fuel anymore. So if you want to import the fuel to sell on the market, you are free to do so. But the government is not going to subsidize it.
Let's talk about debt for a moment. Haiti has been trapped in a cycle of debt. It goes all the way back to the exorbitant payments that your country has had to pay to France after gaining independence. Some economists have estimated that if Haiti had a chance to develop without the burden of debt, it could have added between $21 billion and $115 billion to its economy, eight times the size of the Haitian economy in 2020. Do you think that Haiti should demand reparations? And if so, what does a reparations process look like for your country?
Listen, I don't think Haiti should go into a process of confrontation with any other country by trying to ask for reparation. I think the issue of reparation can be discussed on a diplomatic level. And to
is that a philosophical position or is that a tactical one? Do you believe Haiti deserves reparations?
I think, why not? So it depends on what kind of reparation. That's one of the reasons we said we are not going to do something confrontational. We are not going to confront any country to say that you need to pay me reparation. This is not the way it should be done. I think it should be something to be negotiated diplomatically.
What would the ideal reparations configuration look like from your position?
I mean, I don't think it's going to be easy for a country tomorrow to say, okay, we're going to give reparation to Haiti or of the amount you mentioned. I think the most practical one should be to have a negotiated agreement on something. For instance, it could be on infrastructure, it could be on higher education programs, it could be on any other matter, training whatsoever. But the most important thing is the reparation can be done, but I believe it is something that to be discussed by universities and they made proposal to governments and diplomats and sit together and try to solve the issue. But there is no kind of confrontation strategy that will work, in my view.
Ambassador Edmund, thank you so much for joining me on Upfront.
It was a pleasure to be with you.
Everyone, that is our show, Upfront. We'll be back next week.